The True Crime Society podcast contains adult themes and violence and is not intended for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
If you'd like to skip the intro, please refer to the timestamp listed in the episode description. Thank you.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the True Crime Society podcast with Stephanie and Olivia. It is May 23rd, 2024 right now. And in New York this week, it has been suddenly summer. It's been very hot. That's the weather update. It was like 90 degrees yesterday. And it was just like disgusting. And in this house, it's still very much like a work in progress. So I don't have an air conditioner put in or anything. So I've been very hot and I have to open all the windows, and I put a big fan in the windows, and it's like kind of helping, but not really. So I just wanted you all to know that.
Suffering from very hot.
Yeah. Yeah, I have to turn off the fan. So.
So cold here. Like, I've got tracksuit, I've got my slippers on. It's so, so, so cold. But it's like, I have to say, during the day, it's lovely. Like, it's still, I don't know, 70 something during the day, but the mornings and then the evenings are very fresh and cool.
Yeah. Like, today it was a little better because it rained, so it got less hot. But I'm going to buy a new air conditioner, but I've been swapping out the outlet receptacles here because they're all two prong outlets, and things like air conditioners are all three prong outlets now. So I do have a window that I've chosen that will probably be where the air conditioner goes. But right now, since my kitchen is under renovation, my refrigerator and water cooler are plugged into that outlet. So like, I need this again. The kitchen is ruining my life because I need these to move into the kitchen so I can have an air conditioner. So hopefully that'll be done soon. I did have a random story for the intro that I saved. I forgot to talk about the time because it happened like right after we recorded one day, and then I was so traumatized that I forgot about it. So it won't be a long story for the people who hate when we chat. So I've moved to a place, it's like 10 minutes away from where I grew up, so it's not like I moved to a totally different environment or anything. And my parents, they actually lived down the road from me, from where my house is, when they were younger. Like, it's literally 5 minutes down the road where their old place used to be. And they're like, I was talking about bugs and just how the mosquitoes here could be annoying because I live near a swamp. And they were like, oh, just wait until the mayflies come. And I was like, I didn't even think much of it because, I grew up 10 minutes away from here. I didn't even think about mayflies. I thought they just meant some sort of annoying gnat in the yard. This was probably like 2 weeks ago now. I noticed these little, I guess they're mayflies. They're like weird moth fly looking things starting to like turn up. And like they'd be on my front door, and they'd be on like my windows. And they would just sit there.
Are they attracted to light? Is that what they are?
Yeah.
I feel like we have something similar here where everyone's like, turn off the lights and they'll go away.
Yeah. So they just like kept popping up. And then one day I was in bed and Mike got home from work. And he was like, oh my God, those bugs are all over the window. And I was like, what do you mean? And I went and looked. There's all of our windows probably had like 50 mayflies each on them. And the front, he said the front door was covered in them. And I was like, oh my God, this is horrific. I hate this. So then I went back and laid in bed and I'm like Googling about them and I'm looking them up. And I'm seeing videos from, I think like Ohio or like Chicago somewhere gets them really bad. And thankfully it wasn't this bad here, but in some places they get swarmed so bad. So they only live like a day or two because basically their whole purpose is to breed, lay eggs and die. They don't even have mouths. They don't even eat. They don't do anything. So they only live like the 2 days and then they just die and their corpses are everywhere. So in some places, people literally have to shovel their corpses because there's so many. So the next morning I woke up and I look outside. The windows are like covered in the mayflies. My back deck, because I have solar lights, covered. So many, hundreds. And I was like, oh my God, what is this hell? The next night, then, I was Googling what to do to get rid of them. You can't really get rid of them, but what you can do is live in darkness. So yeah. I go to your neighbor's house. And that's exactly what I did. I got home. I did not turn on any lights. I had the TV on, but I shut all the blinds. I didn't turn on a single light. I unplugged lights, like a little night lights, anything with a light. I unplugged it, except my solar lights in the back. I was too lazy to go get those. But the next morning, I woke up and there was significantly less mayflies. So it worked.
It's so weird.
Then they just disappeared. There's some of their corpses still lingering around, but they were gone. And I was like, what the fuck is the point of this bug? It doesn't even have a mouth. It can't eat. They just want to breed and have tons of them. But for the exact same thing. What is their purpose? Here,
but I feel like exactly the same. It was like one night, everyone like on our local Facebook page, everyone's like, what are all these bugs? And then the next day they were just gone.
Yeah. If you look it up, you see like these horrible videos. They're like a storm cloud in some places and they're everywhere. And then they all die and their bodies are just everywhere. Yuck. So if you live in one of those places, I'm so sorry for you because this by the grand scheme of things, my like 100 or so were not that bad. But just never having dealt with that before, when I grew up very close to here, it was just like, what did I do? Did I move into like a horrible place? I was afraid. Mm. And my cats loved it. They would hear them like on the window and people trying to bust through the screen to get them. I had to pull her back. She was trying to act like she was a predator.
It's her time to shine.
Yeah, that's what she thinks. Speaking of her, I don't even know where she is.
She's really not into it today.
No, lately she's not. It's too late for her, I think. But anyways, what's up with you? Anything interesting?
No, pretty quiet. Same old. Not much going on. We're just settling in for the winter. Got to have our first fire this week, I think it was, in our fireplace. So, yeah. Just getting cozy. I did buy a whole bunch of new jumpers this year because, like, I feel like last year I just lived in, like, T-shirts and coats, whereas I just feel the cold a lot more this year. So I've bought some jumpers, which is very exciting. But, yeah.
In the winter here, I only wear sweatshirts, which I guess are jumpers, and leggings.
Yeah.
Hoodies and leggings, crew necks and leggings. That's it.
That's what I'm wearing right now. I'm wearing, like, track pants, sweatpants, and a hoodie. But this is like after this one I'm gonna go for a walk, I'll have to put my leggings on.
Yeah, you will not catch me in real clothes for 90% of the winter unless I'm going to like a dinner or a party or like it's the holidays or for some reason I want to look nice. But day to day, sweatshirt, leggings, boots.
I feel super boring, but I feel like everyone is like going into hibernation mode. It's not even that cold here, like it's still fine. We don't ever get snow. It's not that cold, but it's cold enough to hibernate.
It's true though, in the winter I feel like my day ends at 5, especially when before daylight savings or whenever around that time, like the sun sets at 5 something and it's like the day's over. And then now at like 8:30 the sun's just going down and I'm like, wow, the day feels so much longer. Like I'm willing to do things because there's still sunlight. I'm willing to do like chores, or if like I want to go out and do something, it feels much more doable versus when the sun sets at 5 and I'm like, oh, it's bedtime.
And I feel like most people feel like that too, because even like where I live, it's quite like a seasonal town. Like they say, if your business can survive in winter here, you're doing well. Because in summer, everyone's out, there's heaps of tourists. Mm-hmm. But in winter, it's a lot colder, a lot slower, because I just feel like people are like, no, I'm not going out. It's too cold.
Yeah.
So our Mike and Miller episode has just come out. I asked on our Instagram if anyone had listened and had any questions or thoughts they wanted to share. We've had a few come in. We might do a few more next week too, because I was probably a bit late in asking for input. But this is an interesting comment, because a lot of people have said that basically some comments I've seen indicate that people think the call may have been an AI call, the 911 call, which I personally don't believe. But then the other one was that basically – she was coerced to make the call, that people are insinuating that maybe someone was there with her and made her.
We did kind of talk about that though when we recorded the episode. Yeah. Remember, so, I said she was so calm.
Yeah, true. It seemed it was unusual, but they always say there's a word for it that escapes me at the moment. But once someone has decided to take their life, it's kind of like the calm before the storm. They're at peace with their decision. They know what's going to happen. They're not frantic. Which could explain why she was calm. But this is an interesting comment anyway. It says, one thing I don't get is that if she was instructed to say she was killing herself, what was the threat? If she knew she was going to be killed anyway, why wouldn't she just tell the operator, which I agree 100%. True. Maybe she thought there was a chance she could get out. This is one question that we had. Has it been confirmed that the gun was not with or very near the body? So from what I've deduced, and I feel like I found this out after we recorded, is that Micah, if it was a suicide, which I still think it probably was, she did it on the kind of the banks of this river or this creek. So basically she stood on the bank, maybe very, very close to the bank, fired the gunshot, and then she kind of fell either backwards or into the water. So the water did carry her, I've read, I think around 40 yards. She was found around 40 yards from where her belongings were found, and that the gun was also found in the water. So that leads me to believe she probably fell forward or fell back, wherever she was, and it went into the water. I feel like the gun was found near her. She had drifted a certain away, you know, a certain amount of, you know, like a certain, she drifted from where her belongings were found, just because that's what happens when you are in water, you move. So mm-hmm. I feel like that's explainable. It seems reasonable. It doesn't seem like she was found miles away, because she was found fairly quickly after the 911 call, like within a matter of a few hours, if that. So I feel like it's a, you know, it's a sensible and rational thing to believe that she probably did drift slightly from where the gun was found.
Yeah.
But yeah, lots of questions, lots of comments too, just about JP and what he seems to be like, you know, a jerk. Someone said he just seems like every time he speaks, he just loves himself. One other comment I have seen a lot on Facebook especially is people were like, what, the church is still going? I thought the church was closed. Apparently for a while.
They're building a huge new church.
But apparently for a while on Google, when you Googled the church, it would come up with permanently closed. So there's been discussion about that. I feel like anyone can suggest edits to business hours to Google. So it could be something along those lines. Or the other theory was that the church said they were closed to kind of stop rubberneckers and reviews and criticism and things like that. So the church is absolutely still operating, I feel like, to a reduced capacity. I saw the other day only 30 people showed up to the Sunday service or whatever the service was. So it seems like it is impacting the church, but it is absolutely still operating.
Yeah. Hi, Peep. She's here. You got something to say? You're not loud enough. Someone also sent in that the person whose timeline we use, what was his name?
Robbie Harvey.
He posted that whatever event or sporting thing that John Paul and his mistress were at, like, ended way earlier in the day before Micah would have killed herself. So some people are like, oh, like, maybe he was involved somehow. I still think she killed herself, and I don't think the call was AI. I don't think she was coerced. I mean, there's literally footage of her leading up to this behind the gun. And like we said, she didn't seem upset or scared. And that person also made a good point of saying, like, if she was going to die anyway, why would she do it? Yeah, I don't think he was involved. Yeah, like, in the sense of that he was there making her do it or murdered her or anything. But I do think he should be held accountable for what he put her through still.
Yeah, absolutely. So we did speak to in the episode about why the FBI may possibly be involved, and there has been some more information come out regarding the financial assets of the church. Apparently the church has $5.9 million in assets, including four properties and an airplane worth around $430,000, which was purchased in January 2023. So I feel like this could likely have some reasoning as to why the FBI may be involved. The church's four properties have a taxable value of $5.59 million. One other thing too that is interesting, after she died, her family submitted legal documents in regards to her estate, and they said, you know, along the lines of basically, she said,
lawsuit.
Yeah, if I'm found with a bullet, it wasn't me, it was JP and all that type of stuff. But interestingly, she didn't leave a will. So I feel like that is going to be a very messy situation based on the fact that she wasn't divorced. We know that she was in the process of getting divorced, but there was no will apparently that she left.
I was also thinking maybe she knew she wanted to kill herself, and with that message that she said, if I die, it was JP. Mish did that on purpose just to make his life difficult.
Yeah, it's a bit like, no, no, I'm not insinuating this, but you remember that it was a Mums Who Murder episode, I think her name was Nancy Johnson possibly, where she mm-hmm. set up the murder of her two children that she did and her suicide to make it look like the husband did it, and many people still believe he was the perpetrator. So, yeah, it could be. They obviously had a very toxic relationship, not victim blaming here, but I could see that that might be something that happened too. So yeah, still ongoing. There hasn't really been much else come out since we recorded. Just we've shared a few different, you know, theories and things like that on our Instagram stories, but we will keep doing so and update you if anything else big does happen.
Okay, so today we're going to talk about sugar baby crimes. We're going to talk about the murder of Mackenzie Lewick and the murder of Lily Gavronowski. Sugar babies, I think a lot of people probably know of the term by now. I feel like it was a bigger thing a couple of years ago that everyone was talking about. According to Wikipedia, the like official definition is, so it's sugar dating. It's also called sugaring. And it's a pseudo-romantic relationship between usually an older, wealthy person and a younger person who is usually significantly poorer. And a lot of times the relationship is so that the young girl or guy is getting money from the older person for a relationship. A lot of times they say it isn't always sexual. Sometimes it is sexual. Sometimes it's just companionship, dates. But I guess a lot of times it's sexual. I guess the agreement is between the two of them, really. So a lot of sugar babies are usually college, university students. So usually payment from the men, the sugar daddies. I was like, what are they called? The sugar daddies to the sugar babies or the sugar mamas to the male sugar babies. They
sugar can usually be sugar children.
They can usually be like money, gifts, designer stuff, jewelry, paying for rent, support, things like that, going out to fancy dinners, trips. So there used to be a website. Is it still a website, Seeking Arrangement?
Yeah, I guess sure. So it is. So I think Seeking Arrangement may now just be called seeking.com.
Broaden their horizons.
Not just arrangements. It says, yeah, seeking champions honest relationships built on attraction and success, guiding you toward, I hope this is the same thing, I'm assuming it is, guiding you towards a life that's not just lived but luxuriously celebrated. Set your standards high. Transform your dating journey with Seeking.
So basically the big website for sugar babies and sugar daddies or parents to hook up was Seeking Arrangement back in like 2018, around that time.
It is absolutely the same thing, because I put in seekingarrangement.com and it just now redirects to seeking.com. So they've rebranded.
According to Seeking Arrangement, the average sugar daddy is 38 and makes $250,000 annually, while the average sugar baby is 25 and makes $2,800 monthly from sugar daddies. I feel like that age and salary would not have been my guess.
For the daddy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would have thought they'd be 50s or
same, you know, making later. More money.
Yeah. I guess that's what they're saying, the average sugar daddy. So maybe eventually, occasionally you'd get one with more.
So that's really the background of what sugar babies, sugar daddies, and sugar dating is all about. So we'll get into the first case we're going to talk about, and that's of Mackenzie Lewick. She was 23 years old, and she was murdered in 2019.
We know a little more this morning about a missing University of Utah student and where she was before she disappeared more than a week ago. Police say Mackenzie Lewick was last seen meeting an unknown person in the middle of the night. CTM lead national correspondent David Begno is following this story. David, what more are we learning?
We have received a host of new information since we first brought you this story 24 hours ago. Police say Mackenzie Lewick arrived at Salt Lake City International Airport early last week. She took a lift to Hatch Park, which is about 20 minutes from the airport, right off the 15 freeway. When she got there, investigators say the 23-year-old met an unknown individual, put her bag in that person's car, seemed happy to see the person, and then left. She hasn't been seen or heard from since.
Our detectives have been working around the clock on this case.
Police in Salt Lake City worked overnight to find the person who met Mackenzie Lewick at that park the morning she disappeared. Salt Lake's Assistant Police Chief Tim Dowd says investigators have been searching the area for clues, looking for surveillance footage.
Detectives have spoken with the Lyft driver and learned that Mackenzie was met at Hatch Park by an individual in a vehicle.
The Lyft driver left McKenzie at the park with that person and stated that McKenzie did not appear to be in any type of distress.
This case at the time, I remember it was huge. It was a big one on our Facebook group, TCS. I remember making lots of threads about it. People were very invested in this one.
It was one that really happened in real time too, because sometimes you don't hear about, like, there's either no media attention or whatever, but like this, we, you know, we're watching as it uncovered she went missing. Like, it was all happening in real time.
Yeah. So she was murdered in June 2019 by a man named Ayula Ajayi. He went by AJ, so we are also just going to refer to him as AJ. He was 31, she was 23, if I didn't say that. And they had met on Seeking Arrangement in 2018, which, like we said, that's a website where sugar daddies and sugar babies can connect, which is interesting because he definitely was not rich.
No.
So I guess they don't do a lot of vetting.
Background checks, yeah.
McKenzie, she had made some online comments about being on sugar dating websites. She was in a group for the podcast Call Her Daddy, and that's kind of how people tracked her down and tracked these comments. So one of the comments, she said, "Try Tinder and be blunt about it. Mine says, I want a sugar daddy, sugar baby relationship with a real connection." If they don't know what sugar daddy, she's writing as SD/SB. So she said, if they don't know what an SD/SB is, tell them bluntly sugar daddy and sugar baby. But if they don't know, they aren't really worth your time. Set your age preferences to 35 plus. You'll have the most luck there. Private message me if you have more questions. I have experience. She also said in a different comment, I have some experience in seeking arrangement, online only, Tinder, and currently have 2 sugar daddies, I guess.
Yeah.
So some background into the people involved. There is McKenzie Lewick. She was born on March 8th, 1996. She was raised in El Segundo, California, and she had 3 brothers, and they were all raised in the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, which is interesting because being a sugar baby is not very Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. She attended El Segundo High School, where she was on the swimming team, and she also played water polo. After graduating high school, she went to the University of Utah, where she majored in kinesiology and pre-nursing. She was also a member of the Alpha Chi Omega sorority. So McKenzie worked at a biological testing company in Salt Lake City, and she was due to graduate in May 2020, and she wanted a career in health sciences. AJ was born in 1988 in Nigeria. He held a green card, which allowed him to work in the U.S. He attended Utah State University, but he was barred from there in 2012 due to visa issues and allegations that he stole an iPad. He was allowed back on campus in 2015 to study computer science after his visa issues were resolved, but he never graduated. So at the time of McKenzie's murder, he was working in IT and was briefly in the National Guard. AJ also had a history of sexual abuse and being violent towards women. On March 10th, 2018, so like a year before what happened with McKenzie, he invited a woman he met on a Latter-day Saints dating app called Mutual to his home. Interesting. Was he just looking for Latter-day Saints girls, or that's just a coincidence? They were watching TV on the couch when AJ began intensely kissing and forcibly touching the victim. She tried to get away, but he pinned her down and bit her at least 3 times, which caused her significant pain and bruising. He was also investigated in regard to a 2014 rape case, but the victim in that case decided not to pursue charges. AJ was married at one point, and his now ex-wife, Tanisha, accused him of threatening her. She said he was going to have someone kidnap and kill her. She cut off all communication with him and also said he would get real aggressive when she didn't do exactly what he wanted. She told KUTV, "I just stopped talking to him because I was fearing for my life. He didn't want me to do nothing. He didn't want me to talk to nobody or nothing." In April 2019, AJ hired a contractor. This part is crazy. Yeah, crazy so to creepy. Even think to ask someone to do this for you. Yeah. So he hired a contractor, and he asked the contractor to build a secret soundproof room under his front porch. He wanted there to be head height hooks installed into the wall and a fingerprint scanner for entry. He told the contractor that he wanted this room made so that he would hide alcohol from his Mormon girlfriend.
And a local contractor has come forward, claiming Ajayi asked him in April to build a soundproof, hidden room behind a secret door at the house.
Never. I have never, ever had anybody ask me anything like this.
After he turned down the job, Ajayi persisted, making repeated requests through texts.
He was adamant about getting it done really fast, and money was no object, and he needed to get it done before his girlfriend came into town.
So, of course, the contractor, being a thankfully sane person, was uncomfortable with this and turned down the job. Just also interesting, he specifically said Mormon girlfriend. Like, is he obsessed with Mormons? Mm.
There's some photos of the house. So he's asking, basically, it appears to me that he's asking the contractor to build the room in the basement. Like, it's like a creepy, like the house is just like a normal, smallish suburban house. Like, it looks like there's maybe four or five steps up to the front door from the porch. So it's not like a massive amount of room under the porch. It looks like he was basically asking for a creepy basement sex dungeon to be built.
Yeah, that's definitely what he was asking for. So a cleaner, I also think it's funny that he had a cleaner.
I guess, like, just to jump ahead a little bit. So he was using the property as an Airbnb. He'd rent out rooms and put, like, the rooms look so gross. But
there's like nothing in them.
Yeah. I don't know why he, like, that's why I assume he had the cleaner, because the house looks small.
That makes sense.
Like, he's sharing, like, so he's renting rooms in the house. He's not renting the whole house as the Airbnb. You could rent a room in the house. Like it says, private queen bed with walk-in closet, $42 a night. It's literally a bed. Like, it looks like a prison a bit.
A 20-year-old guy decorated it, aka there's no furniture, no amenities, just like a bed, a mattress on the floor.
like the walls haven't been painted for a long time. Like, I feel like you'd stay there if you
It probably
really
smells
desperate.
Musty.
Yeah, yeah. It's not like a luxurious Airbnb. It's just somewhere if you need somewhere to stay for under $50 a night.
Yeah. So the cleaner also said that she noticed a lot of cameras inside the home, with many being in the master bedroom. So I guess that's his area, I'm assuming, where the master bedroom is, because I'm pretty sure Airbnb made a rule that, like, you can't have cameras inside.
Yeah.
Tara Chatterton says she was hired to clean the house, but quit after just one day after discovering it bristled with cameras.
How many cameras did he have in the house, and where were they placed?
I figured around 8 to 10.
Wow.
But there was one in every single room for sure, but there was several in the master bedroom.
And where were the cameras facing in the master bedroom?
Towards the bed.
She says the accused killer specifically asked her to bring her 12-year-old daughter, Cherish, with her when she cleaned the house. Tara says AJ had a certain charm, but reminded her of notorious serial killer Ted Bundy.
He creeped me out in a Ted Bundy type way. Like, just, you know, Ted Bundy was very friendly, and that's how he got his victims.
In June 2019, Mackenzie went back to California to attend her grandmother's funeral. She returned to Salt Lake City early in the morning of June 17th, 2019. She texted her parents at 1 a.m. and said that she'd landed safely.
So there are some photos that were released at the time of her in the airport. Basically, she just got off the plane. She's wheeling a bag, but it did confirm that she had gotten off the plane and landed there safely. But kind of an eerie last image of her, because she left the airport and then all of this happened. But yeah, very sad.
I remember when the story broke. This is one that went pretty mainstream.
Yeah, I think it was
again,
a big one.
She's like, she's a pretty blonde white girl in a sorority coming home for her grandma's funeral. But I remember it was big news, because at the time, it was just crazy, because it was like, she flew home, got off the plane, there is pictures, CCTV of her getting off the plane, and then she just disappeared. So everyone's like, what could have happened to this girl?
For like at least a few days, or, you know, a week or so, she was a missing person. Like, we didn't know that this is all what had happened to her. So yeah, it was like, there's photos of her. And I've spoken about it before too. I feel like when there's images or CCTV of someone in there before they disappear, it always gets a lot more media attention.
Yeah. I know I specifically pointed out she's a blonde, pretty white girl. It's because we just recorded Patreon, and we were talking a little bit about missing white woman syndrome. So that's kind of why it was on my mind, of just how black women don't get the same amount of media coverage as white women, and how it's messed up, because we were just talking about the case of Sade Robinson, which is an insane case and a horrible what happened to this girl. And it's like, it's not covered really in the mainstream media at all. And it's just messed up.
Missing white woman syndrome is actually like a documented phenomenon, I guess. Like, you know, we could list a whole, like Mackenzie, Gabby, Petito. Don't want to get off topic, but it's an actual thing that happens because the media just seems to pick up those cases more.
Yeah, I just don't want to take what I said out of context because it was just something we were talking about, so it was on my mind. So anyways, from the airport, she ordered a lift to Hatch Park, and that is where she met up with AJ. She told the Lyft driver that she was going to meet a friend and she was dropped off around 3 a.m. It's believed that AJ had planned to murder Mackenzie from the start because he turned off the cameras at his home to avoid her being documented there, obviously. And the cleaner said there was a bunch of cameras, so he turned them all off. He brought Mackenzie back to his home where then he tied her hands behind her back with zip ties and rope and began choking her with his hands. And she was begging him to stop. AJ then put Mackenzie on her stomach and he strangled her with a belt until she stopped moving. This is known because he ended up admitting to that. On June 20th, Mackenzie's father called the Salt Lake City Police Department to report Mackenzie missing. He said nobody heard from her since she got back to Utah. Police started looking into Mackenzie's phone records and found that she had texted AJ several times in the early morning of June 17th, and her last text to him was at 2:58 a.m. Cell phone data placed both Mackenzie and AJ at Hatch Park at 2:59 a.m. So neighbors of AJ reported a horrible smell that came from bonfires that he held on June 17th and 18th. He was also renting out a room of his home on Airbnb at the time to someone. And a neighbor described the smell of the blaze as something I've never smelled before. And his Airbnb guest said that he could not believe AJ ignited the fire in the backyard.
It's so crazy that he's got Airbnb guests in his home while he's essentially disposing of Mackenzie's body and belongings. Like, it's just to think that he could get away with doing that while there's someone in his home is insane.
And he had allegedly planned this. It wasn't like a crime of passion or something that went wrong. Like, he made the shitty plan.
I feel like you could have maybe blocked out your Airbnb for that week and just not taken any bookings if you were planning to do this. But yeah, crazy.
No, he needed to traumatize some more people as well. So the person that was renting it, the Airbnb guest, said AJ had the pallets and what, or this is someone, I think this is someone talking about what the renter said.
I think some of this is actually from the affidavit. So like if the next paragraph it says,
so they're like talking about what they said.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
A quote
it's
of
kind
a quote.
Of like a recount of what was said at the time.
Yeah. So it says, AJ had the pallets in what he described as a white door. So he is the renter. AJ had the pallets in what he described as a white door on fire behind the garage. He said he stayed on the patio and did not approach the fire. He said a neighbor lady started yelling at AJ and telling him if he did not put the fire out, she was going to call the fire department. The renter said he could not believe that AJ ignited the fire in the backyard and he went inside because he didn't want to be involved in the incident. AJ was also thought to be attempting to give away items from the home online after the murder. There is a mattress that he was trying to give away for free.
For free.
Yeah. He's like, please take it.
Yeah.
And then we have pictures here of the depressing Airbnb listing. It's literally a bed, no headboard, a glass desk, and a lawn chair for the glass desk.
It looks like he had maybe had a few rooms because that room looks a little bit different, but it says private queen bed with walk-in closet. Check yourself in with a keypad, $42.99 a night. So
it's cheap. Mm. So it's believed that AJ first buried Mackenzie in the yard after attempting to burn her remains and her belongings. He also did throw some of her belongings into the Jordan River. But after he was questioned by police, it seems like he dug up most of her remains and then moved and dumped them in Logan Canyon. So on June 22nd, Mackenzie's father told police that his daughter had been using a credit card that he didn't know she had, as well as a separate bank account. She was also using TextMe, a third-party messaging app for cell phones. So that seems like alluding to sugar baby stuff.
Yeah, he discovered that she kind of had this secret life, I guess, that he wasn't aware of.
Yeah. On June 28th, AJ was arrested and charged with the kidnapping and aggravated murder of Mackenzie. Police found a human bone, charred muscular tissue, part of a scalp with hair, and personal items, including a cell phone, in the excavation area of his yard. Charred items were also found in an alley next to AJ's home. Those items, including what looked like black clothing and a possible strap from a purse or backpack. Mackenzie was seen at the airport wearing a compact backpack, black in color. Police looked into AJ's phone records and discovered that on June 25th, between 2:30 p.m. and 4:30 p.m., his phone had been in Logan Canyon. So police conducted an extensive search of the area after what Salt Lake County District Attorney Sim Gill described as a lengthy search. Investigators found recently disturbed ground in a wooded area off the main road. It was in this location where they found a charred human body in a shallow grave. This was on July 3rd, 2019. Some reports say that AJ gave up the location of the body, but according to KSLTV, that is untrue. It says there had been speculation that AJ had cut a deal with prosecutors to reveal the location of Mackenzie's body, but Gill said this wasn't the case and says, DA, quote, no deals have been made. When she was found, Mackenzie's arms had been bound behind her back by a zip tie and rope. The medical examiner determined the cause of death was blunt force trauma on the left side of her skull and ruled her death a homicide. She had a 5-centimeter hole in her skull inflicted by AJ, and this trauma was ultimately what killed her by causing brain hemorrhaging.
So AJ's trial was originally set for March 12, 2020, which we all know, I guess, was the start of COVID time too. It ended up being postponed so that the prosecutors would have more time to go through the evidence and give it to AJ's defense team.
That was actually right before.
Yeah, like I think
that was literally right before COVID because my birthday was March 9th and I was able to still like have a birthday outing and we went bowling. And then one of our friends' birthdays is March 17th and we went out that weekend for his birthday and we were like, things are getting kind of sketchy. And right after that, things locked down. I feel
like
it happened
in like March 20s, like around like 28th or something. No, I'm just making
it was like right after the 17th. Yeah.
So a 3-day preliminary hearing was set for October 28th, 2020. On October 7th, though, AJ ended up pleading guilty to first-degree aggravated murder and third-degree desecration of a human body. In exchange for the guilty pleas, prosecutors dropped the charges of aggravated kidnapping and obstructing justice, and they also agreed to not seek the death penalty. So as we mentioned, it had been revealed then that AJ had always planned to murder Mackenzie. His defense attorney, Neil Hamilton, said, AJ's defense attorney, Neil Hamilton, said he had decided that he would murder Mackenzie before the meeting took place. He didn't say, though, how long the client had been planning the murder. So thankfully, I guess, for Mackenzie's family, after he pleaded guilty, this all happened pretty quickly. On October 23rd, he was sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole, and he was also sentenced to an additional 5 years for desecrating Mackenzie's body. AJ apologized to Mackenzie's family, but the DA has said that he doesn't think it was a genuine apology. He said, "I am sorry for what I did. I deserve what I'm going to get. I know this won't bring her back." Mackenzie's family also spoke. Her father said, "My daughter Mackenzie was a sweet, amazing young lady with the world ahead of her. She was a kind-hearted person that cared about others. Now I will not have the opportunity to see her blossom in life." Her cousin said, "This is a nightmare you can't wake up from. I will never be able to forgive what happened to her. I will never forgive the monster who took her life. Never in my life have I felt anger the way I have the last 16 months. Never have I been so fearful for my life because I know how real evil is in this world." So AJ was also charged in the March 2018 kidnapping of a woman that he met on a dating app. The victim came forward after he was arrested for Mackenzie's murder. The trial for that case was scheduled for December 2020, but he ended up pleading guilty to one count of second-degree forcible sexual abuse, and he was sentenced to 1 to 15 years in prison for this crime. He was also charged with 19 counts of sexual exploitation of a minor. These charges came after police found numerous pornographic videos of children on his computer as they investigated Mackenzie's death. The photos allegedly depicted children between the ages of 4 and 8. He ended up pleading not guilty to those charges though in October 2020 and they ended up being dismissed anyway. There is an article about Mackenzie published by the Salt Lake Tribune and we just wanted to share some of it. It says, "She used to bike to the Pacific Ocean. Years later, she'd recreate those days by putting on her bikini and basking in the sun that shines on the high altitude desert that is Salt Lake City. As a student of the University of Utah, she expressed feminist opinions. She competed on the swim team and played water polo. At U football games, she cheered in the student section known as the Muss. Everyone gravitated towards her, said Cara Barbie, who was her close friend from high school. Honestly, I don't know anyone who didn't like her. One of her sorority sisters, Kennedy Stoner, said she's a nurturer. She's almost a mother to me, and she's one of those people who is always cooking for you. She wants to make sure you're getting fed. She wants to make sure if you need a drink that you have a drink. Just such a sad case from someone, you know, I guess Mackenzie trusted him to the point of, you know, having some type of relationship with him, and he just always had ulterior motives towards her and knew what he wanted to do.
And I feel like, I followed this very closely at the time. I don't even think they'd been talking for that long.
Mm.
So she didn't even really know him that well. So it just goes to show that how dangerous it can be meeting people online, especially if you want to be in like the sugar baby life. Like, it has to be scary just meeting these strangers and hoping that they're not murderers.
I guess too, with the sugar relationship, the person is always expecting something from you. Like, obviously we discussed if it could be sex, it could be companionship, but it's not ever that you're just going on a date to see if it works out. That person,
yeah.
you're entering exactly what it is, an agreement that you're going to provide
to
the person with whatever the agreement is. So there's always the expectation that you're going to deliver. And, you know, maybe if you change, like, I don't think Mackenzie changed her mind. I don't think she even had a chance, but I feel like he just set it up so that she believed she was going to get something in exchange for something, and it didn't work out that way.
Yeah, like, essentially as a sugar baby, you're like seen as a product by some people, unfortunately.
I wonder why he met her at the park. Like, he obviously took her back to the home. I wonder why he didn't want her to get the lift, I guess just to maybe stop the trail of evidence and cover it
up
a little bit.
Yeah, maybe he thought if she took a lift directly to the house, obviously the lift driver would have the address.
But he didn't think more like about.
Yeah, he still was an idiot.
It was a kind of a,
he still then set a massive fire in his yard.
Yeah. So there is a very current case involving sugar dating and murder that's coming out of Washington State. Former city council member James McNeil, who's 58, is accused of the murder of Lilia Gavronowski. She's known as Lily, so we'll refer to her as that ongoing.
Rifles at the ready. Searching under tarps. Seattle SWAT team, miles away from their own city, move with guns drawn in a quiet Bothell neighborhood as they clear the home of former Bothell council member, 58-year-old James McNeil. McNeil is accused of murdering 21-year-old Lilia Gavronowski.
I was totally shocked. Totally shocked. I mean, the James McNeil that I know cared a great deal about the citizens and the kids and the community.
Tom Agnew served on Bothell City Council with McNeil. He tells Fox 13 News he was also close to McNeil's family.
What the, you know, what happened? What happened?
New court documents I obtained answer that question more clearly. Gavronowski's parents say the young daughter met McNeil, a man more than twice her age, in a strip club. They say McNeil dazzled their daughter with dates, parties, and fancy clothes, and even started paying her bills. But the charging documents say McNeil was controlling and emotionally unstable. A note found in Gavronowski's home states McNeil did not support her when she needed it and only wanted sex and complete access to her life.
Just some quick background into James. He served two terms on the city council before losing his re-election bid in November. He worked in the construction industry for nearly 30 years. His criminal history was documented in detail by the local newspaper in 2015 when he ran for election. He had a felony conviction for eluding police in 1986 when he was 19, which he claimed was the result of years of racial harassment by police. He explained to the newspaper that it started when he was 16, when cops ripped out his stereo out of his new car at a traffic stop. He said, "I remember coming home every day as a prep cook and getting pulled over in the same spot by the same cop 5 days in a row. I started to get frustrated and angry. I didn't think because I was black I was getting pulled over, because then racial profiling wasn't a term we used." At the time, James admitted he drove with willful and wanton disregard for the person or property as he fled police who tried to pull him over for an expired license. So it says the driver of the motorcycle turned around and looked at the patrol car and then accelerated very rapidly, refusing to stop. The driver then accelerated his motorcycle, the driver being James, to 60 in a 30 mile per hour zone, driving at speeds of 75 miles per hour in a residential area. James didn't get off, but the judge did agree his crime was the result of persistent harassment and gave him a lenient sentence. James also proved in court that police beat him up after they caught him and then falsely claimed he was injured by crashing his motorcycle. He said, "I got off the motorcycle and there were guns pointed at me, yelling for me to put my hands in the air. I put my helmet on the seat of the motorcycle. As soon as I put the helmet on the motorcycle, I flew in the air and they beat the shit out of me. They dislocated my shoulder, they bruised my ribs, they broke my glasses, and they marred up my face." So that is kind of the extent of his criminal background up until this point. On Tuesday, April 30, 2024, so not even a month ago, James's attorney called 911 to report a likely homicide at Lily's home in the 4600 block of South Orchard Street, according to a police report.
Imagine being this attorney.
I know. Like, imagine, I just, like, so he obviously called the attorney and said, "This has happened. Can you call the police?" So the attorney said, "I'm an attorney. I'm reporting what is a likely homicide. I represent someone inside the residence and I am making the call." So police arrived at the scene to find James with both fresh and dry blood on his clothes. Blood was also found on the headboard, pillow and carpet in the room. In an upstairs bedroom, officers found Lily deceased with marks on her neck, jaw and forehead, and she was lying on the bed nude. Investigators believe that she had been dead for around 24 hours. So he, like, I'm assuming, you know, let's just say the police arrived fairly quickly after this call. So he waited 24 hours to figure out what to do. Maybe he went back to the house. Maybe they had an argument. We're not entirely sure how it went down, but it was a long time after whatever happened.
Clearly he's a dirtbag to begin with because he murdered this poor girl. But also he left her there dead for 24 hours, didn't report it. And the first person he calls is his attorney to probably try to like deal with it in the best way possible.
Yeah. So it was said that Lily didn't appear to have any injuries that would cause her to lose blood, even though there was blood found at the scene. James was taken on a gurney for medical treatment after he was believed to have slashed his wrist. So I guess that could have been some of the blood as well, but it was fresh and dried. So it indicates that some of the blood was older. King County Superior Court Judge Adrian McCoy approved a search for Lily's home search warrant. According to police, there was handwritten lists around the home, including one from Monday that read, "Do not interact with James today." It also alleged in the court documents that James and Lily had been dating for months. They met while she was working as, quote, a stripper. So this is what is in the report. That's not our terminology, but that is what is in the report. So James and Lily dated. James bought her dresses and shoes, which is what her parents told police. When she stopped working at a strip club, James reportedly started supporting her financially. Prosecutors estimate that support amounted to around $10,000 a month. So James had recently left his wife and three children. There's photos of his prior family, I guess, online. The kids look relatively young. Maybe, you know, one looks like a teenager and the other's kind of maybe 10 or 11.
Mm-hmm.
So he had a young family. Her parents described their relationship as on again, off again. On April 27th, they broke up after a fight over expenses. She told her parents that James had an annoying tantrum and tried to control her. So there are a lot of text messages that Lily's friends and family have released in regards to her relationship with James. I'll read out some of them. This is one she said to her family. "He'll be mad for one day. I'll do silent treatment. Until he gets lonely and sad, then he'll be desperate to get me back and he'll start blowing up my phone and love bombing. Presents, extra, extra nice things. We go through this like once a month." Lily's diary also included several entries appearing to refer to James. In one, she said to herself, "Make sure you do not forget how you felt. The anger, hurt, and neglect." In another entry, she said that he was mentally and emotionally abusive. She said, "It's fucked up. He got me to have sex. I was celibate for a year and a half and I was not ready. I really didn't want to. But he forced a relationship and really pushed me and honestly really affected my mental health because I got really depressed and it triggered all my bad emotions from my past." She said, "I thought I could never be played again, but now I'm realizing he played a different game on me that I was not aware of and it really caught me off guard." She said, "He's really controlling and I can tell he thinks I am stupid because I am young. He thinks he's smarter and he picked me and pursued me very strategically. He was really smart about it and he really did succeed. Unbelievable." She then went on to say, "He's been grooming me this whole time, trying to reprogram me to think about myself so I don't expect anything. Don't ask, be easy, give him what he wants to get away with low effort and bad behavior. I'm not that dumb though. He will realize this won't work." So there's a lot of information. I'll keep going because I found it so interesting that she kind of knew what was going on, but she still couldn't.
Like she documented so much.
She said, "He doesn't like older women for a reason and I know why. They will challenge him and be harder to control. He's trying to put me in a place where he has all the access he wants for nothing, but I'm not okay with that. He hates the pushback. He always says I challenge him and he gets so frustrated. He gets mad at the fact that he can't get away with some of these things. She writes, I'm not an idiot, James. I know when you're lying to me, you don't like confrontation. I know that. Who likes it? And I know you're never going to admit that you did, but that I do know what you're doing. Lily also said that she was seeing him still because it was an intriguing roller coaster, and she described how he made up characters in their relationship. She said he pretended he was a sex trafficker at one point and that he was going to sex traffic me. I had a feeling it was bullshit, but I stuck around because I wanted to hear the end of the story. So this guy's just
crazy.
What
does she mean, I had a feeling it was bullshit?
I know. It's like, imagine being pretending role-playing to be a sex trafficker. She said, this guy is just crazy. The games he plays is crazy and it's fun and I'll play it back to him. Lily told her friends, though, before her death that she was getting bored with the relationship. She said that James was not giving her what she wanted and she, quote, won't settle for less. She said, I want a lot in my life. I want to be living like a fucking queen. And if he's not going to be providing that, guess what? He thinks maybe one day I'll just accept it. But no, I'm not going to accept it. I just don't care. Lily also sent a voice message to a friend, which was posted online, updating the friend on how the relationship was going and the toxic dynamic between them. I don't know if you want to put the whole clip in. I think it's like 3 minutes.
You know what? Like, he, I know he's like finding out that like it's not so easy. I think that's probably why he's so like pursuing me, because I'm such a challenge. Like, I'm not like other girls. Like, I will literally not talk to him the whole day. I won't text him. I will not call him. I don't, like, he can get me gifts. I'm not going to be over here, oh, so excited. Like, I just act very like he does not faze me. And in reality, he does not faze me, okay? It's not like I've never met a rich guy in my life. I've grown up with my dad. So the fact that I am, and the fact that I will say no to him, I will say no to him, I am firm with him. And I think because of that challenge, that's why he's still here pursuing me. He's so into me. But like, he's trying to put me in a place where he will have all the access he wants for nothing, you know? But I am not okay with that. So like, I really see he's doing this right now. So he hates the pushback. He always says I challenge him, and he gets so frustrated because it's like he cannot, like, he gets mad with the fact that he can't get away with some of these things, you know? And I'm like, okay, I'm not an idiot, okay? Like, James, I know when you're lying to me. Okay, and of course, you don't like confrontation. Of course, I know that. Who likes it? But, and of course, I know you're never gonna admit that you did that. But just so you know, I do know what you're doing. So I think the reason why I'm still in here is because, honestly, like, I get really bored easily of guys. But I don't know, because it's such a roller coaster. Like, I feel like it's just intriguing. It's just very interesting. I don't know. Like, he would literally make up characters, pretend he's a sex trafficker at one point. He literally pretended that he's going to be sex trafficking me. Can you believe it? And I had a feeling it's a bullshit, but I sticked around because I wanted to hear what's the end of the story. Like, what the, like, this guy is just crazy, you know? Like, the kind of games he plays, it's crazy and it's fun because I will play it back to him. But yeah, that's like why I'm still in this, but now I'm kind of getting a little bit, I'm losing interest because he's not giving me what I want. I will not be settling for less. I will not, okay? I want a lot. I want a lot in my life. I want to be living like a fucking queen. And if he's not going to be providing that, guess what? He thinks that, oh, maybe someday, maybe I will just accept it, you know? No, I'm not going to accept it. I don't care. Because I will refuse to believe the fact that, oh, I can't get another guy. Like, I'm so lucky he puts up with me. I'm like, shut up. I'm not lucky, okay? Guys will put up with me treating them like abusing them. So what are you talking about, okay? I'm not lucky for anything, James. He gets so mad. This is pretty interesting, you know? But yeah, that's what's going on with me. I know it's like such a long messages. And I just like wanted to share that with you.
But in the clip anyway, she says, James pursued her so strongly because I'm a challenge. I'm not like the other girls. She mentioned again about how she would ignore him for days. She said, he can get me gifts. I'm not going to be over here so excited. I just act like he doesn't faze me. It's not like I've never met a rich guy in my life. I've grown up with my dad. So she was playing a game with him as well. And maybe it just got to the point where he you know, lost it because he couldn't control her. She knew what she was doing. So in terms of the legal process after James was arrested, Senior Deputy Prosecutor Gretchen Holmgren requested that a judge set his bail at $3 million. He first appeared in court on May 14. He pleaded not guilty to a second-degree murder charge. James's attorney made a motion to not allow the media to film him and also made a motion to allow James to appear at future court appearances in civilian clothing rather than jail clothing, but both motions were denied by the judge. It's so wild to me. People think they're entitled to things like that. Like, he's in jail. It's not like he's out on bail. He's in jail. Don't film him.
He also murdered someone, so.
Yeah. Lily's friends also appeared in court. She said no one deserved to be murdered. She was a human and we're going to make sure he knew that. It's just another story of wealth and power getting the best of a situation from someone who's just as valued and cared for in the community. She went on to say, I know that the media and the news coverage portray her as broken and troubled, but she was young. She was 20 years old. She was a young woman learning the ins and outs of life and how hard it can be and how life is really, that's hard. So at the time of recording, Lily's cause of death still hasn't been confirmed. However, based on the preliminary investigation and evidence, it appears that she was suffocated. And investigators believe at this point she died at some point between April 28th when she was last seen by neighbours and April 30th when she was found. So that kind of goes along the timeline of him waiting 24 hours to report her as being deceased. His next court date is set for June 4 and a tentative trial date has been set for July 8. If it happens, then that's very, very quick. I would probably suspect it won't happen just based on past experience, but I guess you never know. If it is, that's a very quick turnaround time.
Some places are fast and some places are not.
I always just think of Chris Watts. That just seems like it was so fast.
Yeah.
You know, based on how long Brian Koberger, for example, is taking. But yeah, sometimes it does happen quick. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, well, I definitely don't condemn sugar babies, and I understand why it's appealing to girls, especially girls who are younger, need money. Like, you never know their circumstances. They could be desperate for money, or it could just seem like a fun lifestyle to them. But I think that it is definitely can be dangerous. You don't know always who these men are. And I think if someone is willing to be a sugar daddy, they're probably not the most amazing person just because they're needing to pay for a girlfriend, basically, unless they just like. I feel like someone's going to get mad about me saying this. I don't know. Like, I'm not in the lifestyle. I don't know about it. But I feel like the men who would do things like this, they see these girls as products. I'm sure there are some nice sugar daddies who just enjoy spoiling someone. But I feel like mixed in, there's a lot of men who don't have a woman or love or affection in their lives, probably because they're shitty. They're rich and powerful. So
a way that
they
can control it and get what they want. Like, they could probably never be in a normal relationship with these young women. So they know, because they either get the money or pretend they have the money, that they can.
And they will never see the girl, the sugar baby, as equal or even maybe even as a person. Like, they will just see you as something they pay for that's disposable to them a lot of times, I would guess. And they're not going to treat a sugar baby with respect is also my guess. Again, not saying for everyone before. I don't know how many sugar daddies listen to this podcast, but not to
we'll
offend
find out.
All of them.
I do feel in the James McNeil case, $10,000 a month is a lot of money for a city council member to, like, you know, I know he's probably on a fairly decent income, but to support her with $10,000 a month plus his family, like, I feel like in this case, it sounds like he was probably trying to sustain the relationship with Lily that he probably couldn't afford. And maybe it was just like, I feel like
she was probably sick of it.
Yeah. And I feel like too, Mackenzie's and Lily's cases are very different. Whereas I feel like Lily's death probably happened during an argument or a fit of rage, whereas, as we mentioned, Mackenzie's murder was just planned no matter what she did. But, yeah, I just find it interesting, the circumstances surrounding it. I just can't believe that he thought he could – James McNeil I'm talking about now in the second case, that he could sustain the two lives when he probably didn't have the means to.
Yeah, like Mackenzie's murder – sadly could have been anyone. AJ could have messaged anyone
who agreed to meet
with
him that night. Yeah,
whereas this clearly seems more like a crime of passion, for lack of a better term.
Yeah, I always think about when they said crime of passion in the Jesse Baden Luke case, and there was a lot of outcry because essentially it's like, that's why I think of it more as a rage, fit of rage. He just lost it. And, you know, maybe she said she didn't want to be with him anymore. Maybe she was taunting him. I don't know. Like, there was obviously some type of argument or conflict that led to Lily's death, I would think.
Yeah, crime of passion is like a shitty term. Like, who ever thought of that?
Like, I do understand, like, people do it because
but it makes it sound like,
it's like a
less bad. Like, they were so passionate.
It's like, almost like an inexplainable crime. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, down with that. How has that term not been cancelled yet?
I don't think the police, because the police officer who said it here in that case is like the police chief, the head of police, and people were calling for her to lose a job after that, and she didn't, but it's I feel like it's been cancelled here.
Yeah, I haven't heard much about that here. I'm going to start it. Down with crime of passion.
But yeah, so obviously James and Lily's case will be ongoing. He's due in court in the next probably 3 weeks, so we'll keep you updated on what happens.
I'm surprised
that.
This hasn't made more news either. Yeah. I only found this because I went looking for it specifically for this episode, and I found it on a subreddit about sugar babies.
Yeah. I tried to find if there were any specific stats on sugar daddy, sugar baby crime. There isn't really. I feel like things would happen, I don't want to say frequently, but there are like a few other cases that I've heard of. But yeah, there's no solid stats on dangers to sugar babies, for example, and things like that.
Seems like there should be, but I feel like it's such a, it's like a newer thing that also not everyone's willing to talk about. It's kind of like taboo, so it'll probably be hard to get stats on it ever. Yeah. But yeah, that is it for this episode. Like we said, we'll keep you updated on anything with Lily's case. So follow us on Instagram. That is where we generally post the most frequent updates, True Crime Society. And there'll be a blog for these cases as well, and any of the other episodes we do at truecrimesocietyblog.com. And on Instagram, if you want to follow our personal accounts, mine is stephsum_Olivia, is TCS Olivia, if you want to see what we're up to. And we're on Patreon, like I just said before, we recorded an episode on Shade Robinson, which is just like such a crazy, sad, horrible case that isn't getting the media attention it should, in our opinion. So we do weekly bonus episodes there. And we have some chats, and we do all the episodes ad-free, and I do them earlier release as well. So check us out on there if you want some more content from us, more episodes. And that's really it. Share the podcast with your friends, anyone, everyone. Please tell everyone to listen to the podcast. It's such a big help to us when you guys do that to get the word out. Sharing to your Instagram stories is great too, and we can reshare it. Please do those things. Nice comments, nice reviews, all that. And that's it. Thank you guys for listening. Stay safe and peace out.